Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi and welcome. This is Rabbi Michael Katz with you. Hi, and it is great to be in your company on this Wednesday afternoon here in the High Veld. So let's say hi, High Veld. It's great to be with you. It's great to be able to talk to you today on this sort of holiday time. As you look out the window now and realize that it hasn't stopped raining every day for the last month or so, it seems to be that we are getting tremendous gishmei bracha, blessings coming from above in the form of rain, hail, all sorts of things. And of course, hopefully, it's good for the reservoirs and it's good for the water supply and it's good for the underwater boreholes and all sorts of stuff in order to keep us going from here on in and into the coming year. Yeah, many people on holiday, many people going away. If you are, please travel safely. Have a wonderful trip, have a wonderful time, and come back refreshed, rejuvenated, and in touch. And of course, in tune with what we should be doing as Jewish people. We always begin this show with some look backs at history, things that have taken place around about this time. And I find it quite fascinating that there are so many things that point to the construction, the beginning of the temples in Jerusalem, that all so many different events happened around this time, around this period, this week, leading up to the 25th of Kislev, which is actually on Sunday, which of course we'll talk about a little bit later on, is the beginning of Chanukah, Sunday night going into Monday, Monday being the 25th itself. But did you know that the 25th of Kislev, if we go back 3,337 years ago, which was the time that the Jewish people, of course, were under Moshe Rabbeinu's leadership in the desert, they constructed the Mishkan. So the Mishkan was actually completed, the tabernacle, the first temple, that portable temple that traveled with us for the rest of our sojourn in the desert, was completed on the 25th day of Kislev. Think of synchronicity. Think of things lining up. So the vessels, the tapestries, the wall sections, the other components of the Mishkan were completed on the 25th of Kislev in the year 2449 from creation, which is 1312 before the Common Era, or as we said, 3,337 years ago. The Mishkan wasn't assembled, however, until 3 months later, when beginning on the 25th of Adar of that year, it was erected and taken down daily for the seven-day preparation, training period, prior to its dedication, Chanukat Habayit, that took place on the 1st of Nisan. Now, sages tell us that the day of the 25th of Kislev was compensated 12 centuries later when the Maccabees dedicated the Holy Temple on the 25th of Kislev in 139 before the Common Era, which we will talk about a little later on. It's also interesting to note that in the time of the Second Temple, the 24th of Kislev, which will be on this coming Sunday, construction of the Second Temple resumed. Now, that was in the year 353 before the Common Era, or 2,378 years ago. It was in the first year of the rule of Cyrus, the king of Persia, that Jews were given permission to return to Israel and rebuild the Holy Temple. A group of Jews, led by Zerubbabel, set out for Jerusalem and began working on the construction of the Second Temple. However, the Kuthians falsely accused the Jews of plotting a rebellion against the king, against Cyrus, and they were successful in halting the construction of the Holy Temple for the remainder of his reign and throughout the reign of Ahasuerus, his successor. Now, that's a name that's cropped up many times during the year. Ahasuerus, that ruler, that king, who made the terrible decree together with Haman to obliterate the Jewish people all those years ago. And construction resumed in the second year of the reign of Darius, Ahasuerus' son, on the 24th of Kislev in 353 before the Common Era. So isn't that amazing that we've got now two references to the construction of temples, Mishkan, etc., going back in history. And here is another amazing little point. And that is if we look at tomorrow, the 21st of Kislev. This was the 21st of Kislev in the year 3448 from creation, or 313 before the Common Era, which goes back 2,338 years ago. There was a historic meeting that took place between Shimon HaTzadik, who we meet up in Pirkei Avot, we meet up with Shimon HaTzadik, and Alexander the Great of Macedonia. Now, their meeting was momentous. It was special. It was very, very significant. What had happened? The Sumerians, who were bitter enemies of the Jews, convinced Alexander that the Jews' refusal to place his image in their temple was a sign of rebellion against his sovereignty, and that the holy temple should be destroyed. The Kohen Gadol, the high priest at the time, was Shimon HaTzadik, who was known as the last of the men of the great assembly, as he is described in Pirkei Avot, in the Ethics of Our Fathers. He rebuilt the Holy Temple and revitalized Judaism under Ezra. It was on the 21st of Kislev that Alexander marched on Jerusalem at the head of his army. Now Shimon HaTzadik, who was this Kohen Gadol, this great sage, garbed in the vestments of the high priest and accompanied by a delegation of Jewish dignitaries, went forth to meet him. The two groups walked towards each other all night. At the crack of dawn, they met. As Alexander beheld the image of the high priest, he dismounted his horse and bowed respectfully. To his men, he explained that he often had visions of a similar-looking man leading him into battle. Shimon HaTzadik brought the emperor to the Holy Temple and explained that Judaism prohibits the display of any graven image. He offered to name all the male children born to priests that year Alexander, as a demonstration of loyalty to the emperor, which is, of course, how the name Alexander became a common Jewish name. Isn't that a fascinating story? And the Sumerians' plot was thereby rebuffed. And the 21st of Kislev was declared a holiday. Now, that is tomorrow, 21st of Kislev, because today is the 20th. But what happened on this day? In the year 347 before the Common Era, it's 2,372 years ago, Ezra, the head of the Sanhedrin, the leader of the Jewish people, the time of the building of the Second Temple, made an historic address to a three-day assembly of Jews in Jerusalem, exhorting them to adhere to the teachings of the Torah, to dissolve their interfaith marriages. Jewish people were on the verge of complete assimilation at the time, following their 70-year exile in Babylon. So look at all these things pointing towards the rebuilding, the dedication, and the highlight of the Beit HaMikdash, going all the way back to the Mishkan, the Tabernacle, and then, of course, bringing it up to the time of the second Beit HaMikdash, the second Temple, all happening in this time, the weeks of Kislev, the time of the great Chag of Hanukkah.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi and welcome back. Yes, this is Rabbi Michael Katz here with you. We're on Judaism 101.9 and we are talking things that pertain to this time. So let's get right into the date today, which is the 20th of Kislev. Now, as a way of introduction, we all know and we all think about the fact that in Judaism we celebrate New Year, Rosh Hashanah, as a two-day chag. It is a two-day festival. All around the world, in fact, it is the one festival that is 2 days everywhere in the world, because it is not like the Shalosh Regalim, the three pilgrim festivals, where we add an extra day because of a doubt about which day actually should be celebrated outside of Israel and so on. But rather, Rosh Hashanah is 2 days everywhere. Now, today and yesterday, the 19th and 20th of Kislev, are known as the Rosh Hashanah of Chassidut. Chassidus' Rosh Hashanah. Two valuable, incredible, powerful, special dates and days known as the Rosh Hashanah. Now, we also know that Rosh Hashanah is the head of the year rather than the new year, where people can celebrate and just let off a couple of fireworks and say, yay, a new day has dawned. No. The time of Rosh Hashanah in Judaism is the head of the year, where we think about all the things that the head can and should control throughout the year, and the fact that it is from the head that the arms, the legs, the body, the face, all the aspects of the human being and the human condition are actually governed, and that they take their lead from the head. And so too, from a spiritual point of view, the head of the year is Rosh Hashanah, this head of the year. And therefore, translating it into our terminology of the Rosh Hashanah of Hasidus, it is a very, very special, significant time for Hasidim all over the world and for the advent of the light of Hasidus that began to be spread and shared in the most significant fashion from Yutet Kislev and Chaf Kislev, the 19th and 20th of Kislev, going all the way back to 1798. So going back those, 223 years, 229 years ago, where we actually think about what actually happened and how it came about that these dates were that significant. So let's first of all say that it was in 1772 that it was on the 19th of Kislev that Rabbi Dov Ber, the Maggid of Mezrich, returned his soul to his maker. He passed on, and it was to his Talmud, to his student, Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Liadi, that he said that this day is our festival. This is our Yom Tov. This is our festival. It was many years later, in fact, 26 years later, that his Talmud, Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Liadi, was actually arrested and thrown into jail and released on this day. So the 19th of Kislev marks the day on which his redemption took place, 19th and 20th. So it's celebrated as a Rosh Hashanah of Hasidim, or Hasidism, and it was in 1798 that the Alter Rebbe, Rabbi Shneur Zalman, was released from his imprisonment. Now, what had happened, and how did he get there? The public dissemination of the teachings of Hasidism had in fact begun two generations earlier. The founder of the Hasidic movement, the Rabbi Yisrael Baal Shem Tov, had revealed to his disciples, his work was carried on, as we mentioned, by Rabbi Dov Ber, and they to their disciples. But Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Liadi went much further than his predecessors. He brought these teachings to a broader segment of the Jewish population of Eastern Europe, and more significantly, he founded the Chabad approach, a philosophy and a system of study, of meditation, and character refinement, incorporated in and headlined by the word Chabad, which is an acrostic for the three words Chochmah, Bina, and Da'at, wisdom, understanding, and knowledge. And he brought these abstract concepts to a much more practical, applicable mode that people could understand and grasp, study, and put into practice in daily life. Now, in its formative years, the Hasidic movement was the object of strong and venomous opposition from establishment, from rabbis, from laymen, and even within the Hasidic community, there was an opinion, or many believed, that the Alter Rebbe, Rabbi Shneur Zalman, had gone too far in making these things so tangible and popularizing the previously hidden soul of Torah. And so in the autumn of 1798, Rabbi Shneur Zalman was slandered. He was arrested on charges that his teachings and activities threatened the imperial authority of the Tsar, and he was imprisoned in an island fortress in the Neva River in Petersburg. And in his interrogations, he was compelled to present to the Tsar's ministers the basic tenets of Judaism and explain various points of Hasidic philosophy and practice. And after a 53-day intensive interrogation, he was exonerated of all charges and he was released. Now, the release actually came about on the 19th of Kislev, but in fact, it was late in the afternoon and went into the 20th. And so Hasidim saw these events as a reflection of what was transpiring above. And Rabbi Shneur Zalman regarded his arrest as but an earthly echo of the heavenly indictment against his revelation of the most intimate secrets of the Torah. And he saw his release signifying that the heavenly court had Paskind had decided that these should actually be released, and it was following on his liberation that he doubled his efforts and made sure that he was able to bring these to the fore. And amazingly, it was actually on the 20th of Kislev in the year 1796 that the first printing of his magnum opus, the Tanya, it took place in earnest, and thereby it was placed before everybody to be able to study, to learn, to think about, and to practice. So the revelation of the light of Hasidism. You know, we often think as Hasidim or talk about the fact that the Torah can and is obviously a huge, huge work that can be looked at and studied on so many different levels, but not the least of which is the level of looking at the soul of everything, of looking inwardly. And in the same way as there is a light that is embedded within the heart and mind and soul of each and every individual, so there is a soul to every letter and every word and every nuance and every idea and every law within Torah, every story, every manifestation of godliness that we have. There is something in the realm of a light similar to the light that God created on that first day and put away for to be used by the tzaddikim, by the righteous in the future. There is something so significant about the revelation of this godly light that we can perceive and that we can study and we can think about and we can bring to the fore in our application of everything to do with our Torah and our mitzvot. And this is in fact what Hasidism was really all about, and this is what the Alter Rebbe wanted to bring to the fore, what Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Liadi wanted to bring out. And it's on this day that that redemption, that release took place, and therefore kind of a whole new light was revealed to the spiritual world, and from the spiritual world into the world per se. And it was this incredible time of the 19th and 20th of Kislev that we therefore mark this Chag HaGeula, a time of redemption, where the redemption that took place, as we said, was not just for Rabbi Shneur Zalman, for the Alter Rebbe, for the founder of Chabad Hasidism himself, but for his work and for his teachings and for the teachings of Hasidus that have gone on from generation to generation since then and are still being amplified and applied and thought about in our day as well, and really have changed the face of Judaism, not only around the world in a physical sense, but certainly in a much more deep and spiritual sense. And then we think about how this Rosh Hashanah is a prelude to a time of joy where we celebrate light. You know, similar to in Rosh Hashanah itself, we have a period of time that follows on after Aseres Yom HaTshuva and Yom Kippur. We then have a time of joy, a time of great simcha that takes place, the simcha of the joy of sitting in the sukkah, and then Shmini Atzeret and Simchas Torah, which goes on for 8 days. We have an 8-day festival that follows, in a way, after the 19th and 20th of Kislev, going to the 25th of Kislev, and then on to the 8 days of Chanukah, a tremendous time of celebration, of celebrating light, of celebrating the light of Torah and the light of God's wisdom and the light of our mitzvahs and the light of the neshamas of the souls of Jews everywhere. That is what we celebrate on Chanukah. And it is a unique chag, a unique festival, a festival that is greatly and tremendously inspiring. It is tremendously uplifting. It is something whereby we acknowledge and we look at the power that light can have over darkness. Have you ever thought about, and we do think about, the fact that the menorah that we light, or as people colloquially commonly term it today in Israel, a Chanukia, but really it's a menorah, the menorah which has the 8 branches plus the 1 for the Shamas, commemorating that great, tremendous miracle that took place with the oil that was meant to last only 1 day on the menorah in the temple. In fact, lasted 8 until they could manufacture new, brand new, special Shemen Zayid Zach, the brand new beautiful olive oil from the first drop of oil that comes from the olive, under the seal of the Kohen Gadol, that this could be done in the time of Yehuda Maccabee, the Maccabees, and the whole wonderful historical event and story that took place. But the idea of the light that was created and the light that was brought to an otherwise dark world. And when our world is in darkness, and so we do the lighting of the menorah at a time of darkness, when it is after nightfall, when the night has fallen, when it's dark out there, we bring out our menorahs and we light up the darkness. Now, of course, it's done in a spiritual way. And of course, we know that our lights of our menorah are not meant to be used and not used. And we, in fact, say it in our prayer that we say at the time of the lighting of the menorah, that we do not use it for physical light. We don't read by it, and we don't do our homework by it, and we don't count our shekels by it. We don't do anything like that by the light of the menorah. In fact, that's why we have a shamus there, just in case we use the light for something that we shouldn't have. The main object of the festival is to gaze at the lights, remember the miracles, and think about the nisim, the great, wonderful miracles that Hashem wrought for us then, and that He's going to do for us now, and of course, in the future. The idea of lighting up the darkness of a dark spiritual world and bringing the light into it, is this not the work that was done by the Mishkan in the tabernacle in the desert, the temples in Yerushalayim, the menorah that was lit every day in those temples, and the menorah, of course, that we are going to light on Hanukkah, all lighting up this world, and of course, thinking about the application of the Alter Rebbe, Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Liadi, bringing the 19th and 20th of Kislev, these days of Geula, these days of redemption. And we hope and pray that very soon we will see the redemption with the coming of Mashiach, where once again light will be revealed in the most incredible fashion to push away any semblance of darkness that may remain. Be back with you right after this.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi and welcome back. Yes, this is Rabbi Michael Katz with you, Judaism 101.9. And let's end off today talking about Hanukkah. Hanukkah begins this coming Sunday evening. So from the 14th to the 21st of December are the nights of Hanukkah. So we begin lighting the menorah on the 14th at night. So that's Sunday evening. The last night is also going to be on a Sunday evening. So the first light and the eighth light will be on Sundays, Sunday evening, starting the 14th to the 21st of December. Now, the menorah should be lit in your homes, at home. This is not only a public display, although that is very much part of Hanukkah menorah lightings, that they take place publicly for what we call Pirsumei Nisa, the spreading of the miracle, advertising of the miracle. So done in shuls, done outside shuls, done in town squares, done in public places around the world, and a popular and beautiful event that always takes place around Hanukkah. And of course, with great festivities and the eating of oily foods such as latkes in this country, and many people have taken on the Israeli and American idea of donuts, sufganiyot, that are eaten at this time. But the main thing is, of course, the lighting of the menorah, the lighting of candles. And the candles are lit in the evening. They're lit once it starts to get dark in the evening. And that is then starting from Sunday evening, probably sometime just after 7, the menorah should burn into the night, and therefore you light your menorah starting in the early evening, that it goes into the night. Each and every one of us is obligated in this special mitzvah. It applies to men and women. It applies to children as well. And therefore, the custom is that the menorah is lit in the home when everybody who sleeps under that roof is actually present. And yes, of course, you can have extra menorahs for your children to light. But the main one is that the balabos, the person in charge of the household, should light the menorah. Of course, others can and do of their own as well, as we said, but this one is lit. And we begin by lighting a candle, one candle on the extreme right of your menorah. So when you're standing facing it on the extreme right, we begin with the first one, and then we add another candle to the left of that one, On in the second night, and then the third night, another one, and so on, until on the eighth night we have eight candles. That's excluding the shamus, excluding the one that we usually utilize to light the others, and we stand in a higher or different place on the menorah, so that, as we explained before, in case we use it for our own physical light, that is what this shamus, or the extra candle, is actually representing on the menorah. So we light the candle, increasing in light. Each night, another light. Each night, increasing. And it is done, hopefully and preferably, at the same time every night. However, if the family are not going to be there, or if there's an event and so on, and people are coming home later, it can be done later into the evening, later in the night, and the menorah should burn, and people should sit and watch the candles. They should sit by the candles. So whether you're then sitting down to a game of dreidel, or you're eating your sufganiyot or your latkes, you're having dinner or whatever, the menorah should be a feature in the room, in the house, that you are aware of. It shouldn't be that you light it and then run away. So the menorah should be placed, if it is not in a doorway. Now, it was preferable that it should be placed in a door, in a window, rather. It should be placed in a window, on a windowsill facing outwards, that it's visible from the street. Most of our houses today do not have that ability, especially here in Johannesburg, and therefore the prevalent custom is to rather light in a doorway opposite the mezuzah, in a doorway leading, for instance, into your living room, your dining room, somewhere that leads into the main part of the house, that there is the spot, there is the place that the menorah is lit. It should not be too high. It should be probably more or less chair height, where we light the menorah, on a lower table. We place our candelabra, we place our menorah there, and we light each night of Hanukkah. On the first night, we say three brachot, we say three blessings. The first blessing is Lahadlik Ner Shel Chanukah, Lahadlik Ner Chanukah. The second blessing is Shasa Nisim Lavotenu, that we thank God for the miracles that He did on our behalf, and hope that He does in the future. And the third blessing is Shehecheyanu, on the first night of Hanukkah, thanking God for bringing us to this occasion. That's only done on the first night. On the subsequent nights, from night 2 through 8, we just say the first two brachot, the one of lighting the menorah and the other one of the miracles. So there are two clear ideas and ideals behind the menorah lighting. Number one is the actual event of lighting the menorah. Number two is thanking God and praising God for the great miracles. Pirsume Nisa, spreading the miracle around. So hopefully each night of Hanukkah you will light your menorah with your family at home. Menorahs are readily available around town. Make sure you get one. Make sure you get, if you don't have one, you can make your own. You can light it in a row of candles. That'll also do. But try and light each night of Hanukkah for the duration of the festival, starting on Sunday night and going through to the following Sunday night, the last night of Hanukkah. Be back with you right after this.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi, and welcome back. This is Rabbi Michael Katz here with you. It is Judaism 101.9, and we are summing up our discussion today about creating light, light of Hasidut, light of Hasidus, light of teaching, light of Torah, the light of our souls, and of course the lights that we're going to be lighting for the Hanukkah menorah that we're going to start on coming Sunday night, going through for the week of Hanukkah. Now, the main thing, or the best way to do the mitzvah of lighting the menorah, is to light olive oil. So if you can get olive oil in little cups or containers and so on, especially to fit into your menorah, and you put in a wick, you can make it out of cotton wool if you don't have proper wicks, but they are readily available, of course, for purchase as wicks. You put them in, you light your menorah, and that is the best possible way to do it. However, you can use just about anything else, candles, etc., candle wax. The one thing we don't use is something that burns black or gas, is not used for the lighting of the Hanukkah menorah, but any other kind of candles, Shabbos candles or tea lights or whatever, will do the job or do the trick. And of course, the candles that are made ready for Hanukkah. We need to be careful, but we'll remind you about that next week when it comes to Shabbos, that the candles should burn longer than just those small little Hanukkah candles. But we talk about that perhaps in our show next week. But let's get ready for a beautiful Hanukkah. Prepare. All you need is something to hold your candles, a menorah. All you need is the fuel, the gas, the fuel, the petrol, the oil that you're going to be using and that you're going to be lighting the wicks and so on, to be able to light up the whole world and push away all the darkness, hopefully with our Hanukkah menorah lightings that are going to be taking place starting on Monday night. So we look forward to seeing you at some of the public menorah lightings, and of course, even more so, we look forward to you seeing yourself and your families at your private menorah lightings, which take place hopefully in your home starting from Sunday evening. I want to wish you a great rest of the week, a great Shabbat up ahead, a great rest of this Rosh Hashanah, Chag HaGeula, Good Yom Tov, and looking forward to, of course, a great Hanukkah, and wish you a spectacular, beautiful, illuminating, and uplifting, and special Simchadik, happy Hanukkah, as it is just about upon us. Take care, look after yourselves, look forward to being back with you same time, same place next week on Judaism 101.9.